Peter B. Collins News and Comment for Tuesday, June 25th, 2013. The Supreme Court knocks down the critical portion of the Voting Rights Act.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free.
Electric Motown from about 1969. That's called Ball of Confusion. And I think it properly characterizes the incoherent ruling from the conservative majority of the United States Supreme Court. This is the final week of their session, and the rulings are being announced on a daily basis. Still to come, the much-awaited rulings on California's Prop 8 that banned same-sex marriage after it had been permitted, and the Defense of Marriage Act at the federal level. But today, they took a whack at the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and basically declared that it's based on stale data and that the southern states that were required to get Justice Department approval before they made changes in state-level voting laws, that's history, baby. That's based on all that discrimination that has virtually disappeared. And it is so disheartening to see the white males, joined by Clarence Thomas, decide that we don't have any racial problems that affect elections in this country. And what this part of the Voting Rights Act had enabled was challenges in advance of changes to voting laws, you know, like the ones that require photo identification at the polling place. And these laws are implemented by Republican-dominated legislatures with a governor signing off on them who's a Republican. And they know that the net effect will be that minorities who typically vote Democratic will be locked out of the process. And while Congress said, or the court said that Congress could fix this by updating the voting rights law with new information that reflects the current situation, that's a crock. Because we have a Congress, been elected, particularly the House, through gerrymandered districts. And unless there is a major shift and Democrats regain control of both houses on the Hill, it is politically impractical to consider that changes will occur. Nonetheless, the president said he's deeply disappointed by the ruling and he hopes that Congress will fix it. Well, good luck, Mr. President, on that one. And as we look at Section 4, which was the portion that was struck down, it set the standards, the criteria, which caused Section 5 to go into effect, and that's the preclearance requirement. And so already, in Texas, emboldened by this decision, they will roll out a photo ID for voters that will disenfranchise, at least temporarily, a significant body of minority voters in the Lone Star State. My friend and colleague Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, a longtime advocate of election integrity in this country, summed it up in his opening paragraph quite accurately. In a remarkable display of judicial overreach, activism, and legislating from the bench, the five Republican-appointed U.S. Supreme Court justices, in a 5-4 ruling, have, in the words of dissenting Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, demolished the centerpiece of the nation's 48-year-old Voting Rights Act, ignored the court's own repeated rulings, overridden a repeated and unambiguous mandate by the Congress, and made an absolute joke of the no uncertain terms directive of the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And he really, I think, nailed it in that one paragraph so accurately, because these are the justices who said they would respect precedent, who said that they wouldn't be legislating from the bench, that this wouldn't be an activist court under Chief Justice Roberts. And all of those are contradicted by the action that they voted to take and that was announced today. And Friedman points out accurately that this voting rights law has been updated and reenacted four different times, most recently in 2006 after a very lengthy process that was managed by Republicans when they controlled the Congress. And Jim Sensenbrenner chaired the House Judiciary Committee. He's the right-winger from Wisconsin. And so for the court to basically steamroll a relatively recent reevaluation and extension of the Voting Rights Act just belies their claims of being, unactivist or not activist judges. You can't say unactivist. So this is a major setback, and it could have impacts as soon as next year, the 2014 midterm elections. And Greg Palast points out that last year, the Republican Secretary of State in Florida, Ken Detzner, tried to purge 180,000 Americans, mostly Hispanic Democrats, from the voter rolls. He was attempting to break a record set by Catherine Harris. And he claimed that all these people who are brown are illegal aliens. But Section 4, that was struck down today, requires that 16 states with a bad history of blocking black and brown voters must pre-clear with the Justice Department any changes to voter rolls and voting rules. And Section 4 stopped Detzner from doing it last time, but it will be no impediment to him in the future. And that will be mirrored across the country as Republican-controlled state houses and governorships will move to eliminate the prospect of many Democrats going to the polls. So it's a deep setback and a very troubling development. President Obama gave a speech today at Georgetown University renewing his pledge to address climate change and human contributions to carbon emissions and global warming. And before we get to the details of the speech, I have serious, serious questions about the strategy of the president and the White House in the timing of this speech. Because what he announced is that since he can't get any meaningful climate change legislation through Congress, he's going to use what limited powers he has administratively, try to reduce emissions from coal-fired power plants and other sources. Critical to this is his nominee for the second term at the Environmental Protection Agency, Gina McCarthy. She's at the number two level in the agency now. She has solid credentials, a good regulator. And yet, her nomination is twisting in the wind. And politically, to announce to Republicans that he's going to use the EPA to do what they block repeatedly at the congressional level just invites them to further delay, if not kill, the McCarthy nomination. And if the president is hoping to accomplish any of what he outlined today, he needs Gina McCarthy or somebody quite like her. And so strategically, I simply don't get it. Now, he said some good things. His rhetoric about the problem is kind of moving. He says, as a president, a father, an American, I'm here to say we need to act. I refuse to condemn your generation, speaking to the Georgetown students, and future generations to a planet that is beyond saving. Well, nice words. The president also made references to the Keystone XL pipeline. He said, our national interest will be served only if this project does not significantly exacerbate the problem of carbon pollution. The net effects of the pipeline's impact on our climate will be absolutely critical to determining whether this project is allowed to go forward. Now that is what Obama does best. Because those who are hoping that he will block the final construction of the Keystone XL pipeline will read into his statement support for their aspirations. But he didn't really say anything, and he didn't announce his decision today. He could have. Oh, there's going to be more process and more study. And somehow they'll come up with a way to say that it's in our national interest and it won't exacerbate the problem of carbon pollution. And so in listening to the president's speech, I can say he has good intentions. But his ideas are to, I guess, repudiate what he's been saying over the years about clean coal and put limits on carbon pollution from existing power plants and to complete pending rules for new plants. He will direct the Environmental Protection Agency to work with states and industries to devise standards for emissions of CO2 and other heat-trapping gases from existing power plants by June 2014, so a year away, and will finalize the rules 2 years from now. Now, I know that nothing happens quickly in Washington, but that is hardly a fast track. And the president is asking for about $15 billion, $7 billion to finance international climate mitigation, $8 billion in loan guarantees for innovative energy efficiency. That's about, it's less than half amount of the amount that we'll get to in a moment, that Republicans are demanding for the so-called border surge that'll cost almost $40 billion. And I'm sorry, the threat of a few people sneaking over the border pales in comparison to the threat posed to the entire planet by climate change. But that's the Washington we live in today. So here's a critical look at the president's announcement today from our friend Steve Horn at DSmogBlog. He said that unfortunately it is a full-throttle endorsement of every aspect of fracking and the global shale gas market. The president talked about federally supported technology that's helped our businesses drill more effectively and extract more gas. And he said, now we'll keep working with the industry to keep making drilling cleaner and safer, make sure that we're not seeing methane emissions, and to put people to work modernizing our modern infrastructure, so that we can power more homes and businesses with cleaner energy. The bottom line is natural gas is creating jobs. And so he is trying to mollify critics of fracking by saying he knows what the risks are, but by golly, we're going to take care of that so we don't have anything to worry about. Now, he didn't talk about its impact on groundwater. He didn't talk about simply the need for massive amounts of water to pump into the wells to push the gas and oil out. No, he's very selective in what he actually talks about. And Horn cites a quote from the president's speech, "Burning natural gas is about one-half as carbon-intensive as coal, which can make it a critical bridge fuel for many countries as the world transitions to even cleaner sources of energy." Horn says that premise is false. When measured in its entire life cycle, as Cornell University researchers found, fracked gas is actually dirtier than coal, and then, therefore, is a bridge to nowhere. The president also talked about the Unconventional Gas Technical Engagement Program, previously known as the State Department's Global Shale Gas Initiative. And it says that, this will share best practices on water management, methane emissions, air quality, permitting, contracting, and pricing. And the plan also endorses shale gas exports, expansion of nuclear power. And there's another story that Steve Horn recently published at DSmogBlog that I recommend to you. And it relates to studies about the impact on groundwater from fracking. And Horn relates it to the recent decision by the EPA to end its study into groundwater pollution in the state of Wyoming caused by, you guessed it, fracking. And that contradictory message is just another example of the way that Washington works, or doesn't. Well, I was following carefully, I thought, the travels of Ed Snowden, who left Hong Kong on Sunday, arrived in Moscow, did a head fake to Cuba, It was rumored he was on his way to Ecuador. There was a report that proved erroneous that he had transited through Oslo, Norway, on his way to Iceland. And even the chair of the Norwegian Pirate Party, Øystein Middelthun, originally reported that he was at the airport waiting for Ed Snowden in Oslo on Sunday night. But it turns out that that report is not true, and at least as of right now, it appears the whole world is baffled by the intentions of Ed Snowden, and it appears that he is trapped in the transit wing of the Moscow airport. And Putin weighed in today, Vladimir V. Putin, the maximum leader of Russia, who's on an official visit to Finland. He said, Snowden is a free man, and the sooner he chooses his final destination, the better it will be for both of us, both for us and for him. He said, Snowden's arrival was a complete surprise for us, the Russians, and that as a transit passenger, he doesn't need a visa or other documents. He has a right to buy a ticket and fly wherever he wants. And Putin ruled out any collaboration with Russian intelligence. He said they've never worked with Snowden and are not working with him now. And the American authorities went into overdrive, first blaming China and then lecturing the Russians on why they should turn Ed Snowden over to the United States. And Putin dispatched that very handily. He said, we can extradite foreign nationals only to those countries with which we have relevant international agreements on the extradition of criminals. We have no such agreement with the United States. Ed Snowden, a man without a country, apparently hanging at the Moscow airport. We'll keep watching and reporting on his latest location. Here's an excerpt from the interviews that we posted for subscribers yesterday at peterbcollins.com. Elected officials who I talked to at the Netroots Nation conference in San Jose last week. And here's an excerpt from my chat with Congressman Keith Ellison, the Democrat from Minnesota. And you're going to hear his reaction after I told him of the dramatic revelations that NSA whistleblower Russell Tice made in an interview with me and Sybelle Edmonds for the Boiling Frogs Post just a week ago. And Ellison was appropriately shocked by the information that I told him, and this is how he responded.
It's disturbing, and I'm going to look into it, and maybe we can talk about it a little bit more. Let me reiterate something I just said. When entertainers lie, we feel quite empowered as members of Congress to hold hearings on it. Was there doping? Did some baseball player take some stuff he shouldn't have taken? But when the powerful lie, the people who can hurt us bite back. Mm-hmm. People have pause. Let me figure out what I can figure out here, and let me just let you know that I'm going to be on the side of the Fourth Amendment. I believe that it is completely improper and have repeatedly said that investigating and gathering information relative to Americans who have nothing, no articulable suspicion to any sort of a crime or act of terrorism or anything is wrong and violates the Constitution. And I'm glad, and we're right now, we're hoping to have a left-right coalition to really amend the Section 215 of the Patriot Act.
I think we need a new church commission.
Well, you know what? That sounds good to me, but we need to get to the bottom of it.
I will be following up with Congressman Ellison after he's had a chance to listen to the Tice interview, as well as Senator Jeff Merkley, the Democrat from Oregon, who has been quite a leader on demanding accountability for the surveillance program and a return to constitutional rule. I want to mention one thing that I follow a lot of different stories every day, but for the purposes of this news and comment podcast, I try to boil it down to the 10 stories that I think are most important, some of which are not appropriately covered by the corporate media. And so this is not a comprehensive look at the world, and I simply can't cover anything. I'm just one guy. Everything. I'm just one guy. And so I've been watching the debate in Washington about immigration reform and haven't had much to say about it recently because it was just a lot of squabbling and skirmishing. But now, Republicans in the Senate have ginned up a border surge. And this is such a crock, because it is aimed at mollifying the Tea Party right, which has demanded that none of the other elements of immigration reform can go into effect until the border is completely locked down, secure, nobody's getting through. And that is a mission of great folly. It's also driven by racial profiling, because Tea Party Republicans respond only to the threat of brown people creeping over our southern border. We know that many people who are called illegal aliens by the right didn't come over the Rio Grande or the southern border at all. They came in at an airport. They overstayed a tourist visa. There are many ways that people have abused our immigration rules. But the focus is always, always, always on Latin Americans. And the idea is that they are undermining our country and they have babies too often and all kinds of really disgusting xenophobic things are said about them. And so, as a compromise, because it became very clear that they couldn't come up with legislation that would address the extreme concerns and actually seal up the southern border, so we're just going to throw money at the problem. $38 billion, and it got 67 votes in the Senate. Now, I don't know where this money's coming from. I haven't been told that it was paid for by a tax increase on the rich or by cuts in Pentagon spending, two of my favorite sources of new revenue. But they're holding hostage the so-called path to citizenship, which has now been extended to 13 years. So if this bill passes this year, someone who is here without documents today might be able to become a citizen in 2026. I just think that's ridiculous. And there is no reason to create such a long so-called pathway to citizenship. But it is one of the hardline demands of the right wing. So they're going to double the number of Border Patrol agents to 40,000. What a waste of money. So misguided. And the Democrats are so desperate to come up with something that will pass and that the president can sign that they'll accept almost any demand from the radical right. Speaking of which, the radical right has run out of gas on the IRS scandal because newly discovered documents show that the discrimination against political groups that were seeking tax-exempt status under 501c4 of the IRS code. It wasn't limited to Tea Party and Patriots and presumed right-wing groups. They also screened for the word progressive, for Occupy, for medical marijuana groups, for those that appear to be anti-Republican or pro-Democratic. And I applaud this. The IRS should be carefully scrutinizing these applications for unwarranted nonprofit status when they don't meet the criteria. Because if you're a 501c4, you're supposed to be exclusively dedicated to social welfare activities. But that's been construed by the FBI, well, up to 49% political activities. That would be sufficient to qualify for exclusive. Well, games have been played here by people all across the political spectrum. There is abuse of the IRS rules, and it should be eliminated. And so, while I know the first revelations were grabbed by Republicans, seized upon to demonize the president, it appears that, with some exceptions, this was a fairly reasonable approach to trying to enforce the IRS rules, and that's what the unit in Cincinnati was charged with doing. There's a new film out called Fruitvale that recounts the tragic death a couple of New Years ago of Oscar Grant on a BART train, or actually a BART platform, at the Fruitvale station in Oakland, California. After he was killed by a BART officer who said, "Oh, I thought I was reaching for my taser," when he grabbed his pistol and shot Oscar Grant. It produced demonstrations, protests, and once again, the rogue officers of the Oakland Police Department blew it. They have now agreed to pay a little over $1 million to a group of those protesters who filed a lawsuit, assisted by the National Lawyers Guild in San Francisco. Some of the people who were falsely arrested will get a few $100s. Others will get as much as $9,000. But it doesn't fix the problem of the Oakland Police Department and the crime that continues to fester in the community that it underserves. And so I hope that I've heard very good reviews about the Fruitvale film. It's going to be opening in July, and maybe our friend Gary Chu will offer a review of it. Remember John Corzine? Worked on Wall Street, bought himself a Senate seat from New Jersey, got bored with that and bought himself the governorship in New Jersey. Then he stepped out and joined a company called MF Global. Now, I don't know what the founders of MF thought the MF should stand for, but MOFO is a pretty good interpretation. There's $1 billion or more missing from the trust accounts that were held for investors at this brokerage firm. John Corzine is responsible for it. And finally, a little bit of accountability for a Wall Street crime. Not a criminal lawsuit, but a civil lawsuit has been filed, and Corzine is named. Take a couple of years to sort through the courts, but it's a refreshing change because we haven't seen the Holder Justice Department offer much investigation or accountability for the white-collar money crimes that have haunted our nation for the last 5 years. And finally today, some blowback from the drones. Many people think that drones are great because American lives aren't put at risk and we can target the bad guys and just blow them up with a Hellfire missile. But we know that only 2% of the people killed by drones are actual militants or terrorists. And in Pakistan over the weekend, Islamic militants disguised as policemen killed 10 foreign climbers and a Pakistani guide in a brazen overnight raid against a campsite at the base of one of the world's tallest mountains in northern Pakistan. And this is an area that isn't generally in conflict. But it was announced by a Taliban group that this is payback. It's payback for drone strikes. It's crude and it's ugly, and I hate to see innocent people lose their lives as one group tries to send a message to the brutal American military machine. But I hope people will understand that there are real consequences, real-world prices to be paid for our remote-control video game killing systems, the drones. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. You are always authorized to share this podcast, and I hope you will. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until